Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, Brian Westbrook. We have made
Jenna,
it to Friday.
I'm sorry to interrupt you right off the top of the show.
Go ahead, Nick.
But I just want to tell the audience, 58 minutes from now, I have a major show announcement to make. Jenna doesn't know, Wilds doesn't know, Brian doesn't know. 58 minutes from now, a major show announcement. So I just want to let everybody know that. Jenna, take it from
Are you getting your hair cut?
Just want to let everybody know. We'll see.
That probably isn't it. That is a tease, as we call it. All right, we will wait for that. We got 58 minutes until then. But coming up on a Friday morning, does LeBron need a title this season? Can Jason Tatum be the best player on a title team? And can Cam Newton be the long-term answer in New England? That might depend on whether he could be the short-term answer. We shall find out. But we stay in the NFL for our top story this morning. The Dallas Cowboys, ESPN.com, ranked the best running backs for 2020. And Ezekiel Elliott came in not first, not second, but third place behind Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey. But it wasn't the ranking that fired him up. One offensive coach who left Zeke completely out of his top 10 had this to say: very few breakout runs, doesn't look as strong anymore, feels like he's about 60 to 70% of what he was. Well, Zeke took to Twitter to respond saying, whoever that is faded, LOL. Sure. All right, let's take a step back. Nick, when we started the show maybe 3 years ago, this was clearly Zeke's team. We knew it, the Cowboys knew it. Last year, this was a passing offense. So in order for the Cowboys to be contenders, does this offense need to be more about Dak or more about Zeke?
It's got to be more about Dak. And it doesn't matter if Zeke is the most talented player on the offense. It's the NFL. It's 2020. And if you have a capable quarterback, you need to have a pass-centric, pass-first offense. I know folks might want to say, Nick, half the conference finalists last year were run-first teams. The San Francisco 49ers, the Tennessee Titans. But those teams were run-first teams because it was a necessity due to who their quarterback is. If Jimmy Garoppolo is your quarterback, you have to be a run-first team to succeed. If Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback, you have to be a run-first team to succeed. Dak Prescott is either going to play this year under the franchise tag Wilds, or he's going to play this year as one of the three highest paid players in the history of football. You have Amari Cooper, who just became the highest paid wide receiver in the history of football. You just drafted CeeDee Lamb. Zeke needs to benefit from Mike McCarthy opening the offense up, from him facing fewer 7 and 8 man boxes, and needs to be a counterpunch rather than the consistent jab he was last year. So if the Cowboys are not going to be a good team, but a great team, which, Kevin, I think they possibly could be, it's going to have to be on the right arm of Dak Prescott, with Zeke being a complimentary player instead of the featured player, Wilds.
Yeah, so the coach might be faded who made this comment, but the point has got some validity to it. If we can see the graphic on, he placed top three, but his explosiveness, Brian, I want your take on this. Saquon, this is rushes for attempts for 20-yard rushes. Saquon, one every 27 attempts. McCaffrey, one every 47. Zeke's one out of every 75. We had Dusty, our researcher and perennial Eagles fan, said your career average was one out of every 31 attempts. So is it just as this cut and dry with, like, look, he lacks explosiveness, the numbers don't lie, or is there more to the story?
Well, I still think that Zeke is still very explosive, but I also think he's a volume back. He's a guy that's going to get 2-3 yards and then get a 20-yard play. And so he may not have the explosive plays like Saquon had, and maybe not have the explosive plays because he's not operating in space like Christian McCaffrey. But I still think Zeke is very qualified, and I still think he's one of the best running backs in the league, and he's certainly in the top three as far as I'm concerned in my list. And when I look at this Dallas team, I don't know that the conversation about whether it's Zeke's or Dak's offense is really the case. Truly, when I go into an offensive meeting room and we're talking about game plans for a team, we're saying, what are the weaknesses of the defenses? What are the things that we can attack, whether it's the pass or the run? And truly, in the game, it's going to be probably a little bit of both. And we want to attack those defenses. And when you see the roster for the Cowboys, they have the ability to attack a defense, whether it's with their pass or with their run. Let's look at their offensive line. Tyron Smith, you're talking about Lyle Collins and Zach Martin, three of the best offensive linemen in the league. They have the ability to pass block as well as run block. Blake Jarwin, a tight end, I think he can be more physical in the run game, but certainly when you put him in space in the pass game, he's going to be effective. Three wide receivers, Michael Gallup, Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb, they can hurt any defenses and can strike fear in any defenses down the field. When you look at Dak coming off his best season in his career, I think that he has the ability to throw the ball down the field. You combine it with Mike McCarthy, and I think you'll have some success there. And then Zeke, one of the top three running backs in the league, you combine him with Joe Philbin, the new offensive line coach, who's going to implement that wide zone run game. And now Zeke has the ability to find the hole, cut, and slash the defense. To me, that's going to be an operation for success. But this is what you talk about Mike McCarthy is going to do this year for the Cowboys. He's going to implement more of the 21 personnel that the 49ers ran, the two running backs, one tight end set. And so what happens with that is if a defense says, okay, they're in a base personnel offensively, we're going to have four down linemen and three linebackers. Now it's time to pass the ball. We're going to flex Blake Jarwin out. We're going to pass the ball a little bit. But if they're saying we're going to play nickel, now we have two linebackers and one cornerback in the game in the nickel slot area. Now we're going to run the football and make a defense respect our run game. So you can be multiple in the pass game, in the run game. I think you have the ability to do that. But the one thing I know that this team has to do is in the play action game, when you're taking the ball and you put it in Zeke's belly and then you take it out and now you want to throw the ball down the field, they need to take shots. They need to take deep shots similar to what the 49ers did in their offense. If they do that, they'll be more explosive down the field. And lastly, Mike McCarthy has talked about the shifts in motions. That's what Kyle Shanahan was one of his strong suits, having the ability to say, okay, we're going to shift, we're going to motion and get a defense off balance before the snap. If you can do all those things and you look at their roster, there's no reason why the Cowboys can't be successful running the football as well as throwing the football down the field.
And Brian, I think you touch on such an important point, which is allowing the defense to personnel-wise dictate what you're going to do on a given play. Listen, Zach Martin is a great player. He ain't Larry Allen. And Zeke's a great player. He ain't Emmitt Smith. I say that because those Cowboys of the early 90s, Larry Allen used to play the train horn, walk in the line saying they're running right behind me. You know they're running right behind me. I dare you to try to stop it. And they couldn't. The Cowboys too often, I think, over the last few years have thought they could be that. You got 8 men in the box. You expect us to run. We're going to run it anyway. And given the volume that Dak showed you he could throw for last year, I do think they can be more pass first. And I'll kick it back to you, Brian. If I'm not mistaken, if my history's right, you made your first Pro Bowl the first year you guys had T.O. And I would imagine part of that was when you got, like, the defense all of a sudden had to focus a little more on Donovan passing deep down the field, and it opened things up for you. And so I just think Zeke can benefit more from maybe a slightly lower volume, but when he does get the touches, they're under less adverse circumstance, if that makes sense, Brian.
Well, you're exactly right. When Zeke was doing his thing, he was winning against 7- and 8-man boxes. But now he has the ability, because of those receivers on the outside that defenses have to respect, now he's going to be playing against 5- and 6-man boxes. So for Zeke, this is a great opportunity for him to have a very good season because of the light boxes that he'll face. And then if you throw in that play-action pass, it's going to get even lighter. So this will be a great season for Zeke. I have no question about that.
Guys, we talk about Zeke like he's been in the league so long, he's only 24. We know Zeke's one of, if not the best player on the Cowboys team. Is Jason Tatum the best player on a title Celtics team? Enes Kanter is all in on a Boston championship. Take a listen, Nick.
Oh, my goodness.
What's up, everybody? This is 2008 Boston Celtics World Champion Trophy. And this is the 17th one, but guess what? 18th one is coming soon. Just wait.
Some Celtics. All right, Antoine, you were with us a couple of days ago. We asked about Boston's chances of winning a title. How could you forget? Nick said 0%. You said 20%. So Marcus Smart, a little more in line with you, Twan. Earlier in the week, he said Jason Tatum could become one of the best players ever. Tuan, is it crazy to think Tatum is already capable of being the best player on a championship team?
He could become the best player on their team, but if you look at the Celtics and how they played this year, right before, you know, obviously everything happened, he was playing great basketball. He was on a scoring tear. But they got some other guys on their team. They got three guys that average 20 points a game, and Marcus Smart, you know, comes off the bench at 13. So they share the ball really, really well on the Celtics. But his offensive package could be really, really good. He's polishing it up right now. A sneaky good three-point shooter that we don't really look at him as shooting threes, but he's a very good three-point shooter. He's got all the offensive skills. So he can be one of the best players ever. I don't know if I need some more sample size of that before I give him that. But I do believe he can be a great player. I do believe he can be a 10-time All-Star. He has all the potential of being great. But the Celtics have some good pieces around them, and Jaylen Brown is just as young as he is. And then obviously Kemba Walker's in the prime of his career. So they're going to continue to share the basketball, but he's a great scorer.
Here's the thing, Antoine. And you're my guy, and Enes Kanter is the Celtics center. He and I are newfound friends.
It's always a bad sign.
And I have immense respect for Jaylen Brown, immense respect, and I like Tatum a lot. If the Celtics are to make the finals, Jason Tatum is going to have to be on the trajectory of not a great player, but one of the greatest players in the history of the league. Why do I say that? The key number here is 22, not the 20% chance Antoine gave him, but 22. That's how many years Jason Tatum has been on this earth. Here is the full list in the last 40 years of guys. I'll give him an extra year, 23 and under to be the best player on a finalist, not even championship team, finalist. Kevin Durant did it at 23 in 2012. LeBron James did it at 22, a little ahead of everybody else, of course, in 2007. Tim Duncan did it at 23 in 99. Shaq did it at 23 in 95. Akeem did it at 23 in 86. That's it. Guys who are 23 or younger have been the best player on a finalist. People say, what about Magic? Magic was 20 when he won finals MVP, but Kareem was league MVP that year. Magic wasn't the best player on that team. I just listed the 17th, 1st, 7th, 13th, and 12th greatest players ever. That is what KD, LeBron, Duncan, Shaq, and Akeem are. So, I'll be the first to admit I was wrong if Tatum can join that list. But Wilds, unless we are saying forget superstar, forget best young player in the league, Jason Tatum is on a trajectory to be one of the 20 greatest players we've ever seen, and the Celtics ain't making the finals this year. That's just what 40 years of NBA history tells me, Kevin.
First of all, there's nothing more that I like when you have to go through your own calculus of, like, and the 17th best player. The fact that that's always available is just wonderful. But look, Antoine, everybody in the East, the contenders have one reason to win the championship. The Bucks have historic point differential. Philadelphia, they're 29-2 at home. The Raptors are the defending champs. The Heat, the Jimmy factor. It's less statistically proven, but I'm going to dig into it. The Jimmy factor, just for overall. The Celtics are the only team in the league that, like you said, who have three guys averaging over 20. The only team in the league. So look, the idea that we have to be like, hey, this has got to be like Destiny's Child. There needs to be one star. We don't. It can just be very similar to the drum roll, please. The old big three Celtics, not Larry Bird and those guys. But in the playoffs, Garnett averaged 20, Paul averaged 20, and Ray averaged 15. Now, the question for you, Antoine, is we said earlier when you're talking about the Raptors, they don't know at the end of the game who the ball should go to. Me, I think that ball goes to Kemba. Do you think that there's any chance that the Celtics are actually too balanced and that could be a negative for them?
It remains to be seen. That's going to be on Brad Stevenson and who he trusts to have the ball late. It looked like before we had this break that it was Jason Tatum. He obviously, we know Kemba was hurt, and he's supposed to be 100% now. I see Kemba still trying to be the guy taking the shot late at games. I think right now people are putting Jason Tatum in that category because the East is wide open. I mean, obviously Milwaukee, Giannis has been unbelievable. He'll be up for MVP, obviously, again, but besides that, Philly still, you know, Embiid is not, you know, hit his full potential. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's trying to get this young Miami team going. The Raptors don't necessarily, to me, have a go-to guy. They do it by committee. I think when you look at the Celtics, they do it by committee, but people saw that last couple weeks of Jason Tatum on that scoring tear, and people now starting to think that he can be one of those elite guys, but he's not there yet. They have a great balanced attack offense in Boston.
Nick, I want to just ask you a quick question, real quick. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, and probably to your point as well, like, you know who does believe in Jason Tatum? Obviously, Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics. They could have had Anthony Davis, but Danny Ainge said, I'm not getting rid of Jaylen Brown. I'm not getting rid of Jason Tatum. Those are my core guys. I mean, the Celtics seem all in on maybe Tatum or Brown, but probably Tatum being their guy for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and that's one of Danny Ainge's many missteps. If you could have had it, you could add Kawhi. If you'd have gotten rid of Jaylen Brown, and maybe you're the defending champs. And if you could add Anthony Davis, and you don't want to get rid of Jay. Listen, Jason Tatum, people think I hate Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum is a really good player, but the narrative on him has so far outpaced the reality. Antoine's right. He had an amazing February. 31 points per game, 48% from threes on tough threes. Look at those threes. Those are tough threes. But February is not the season. Here is Jason Tatum on the season. He's averaging 23.5 points per game. For some context, it's not quite as many points per game as notorious huge scorer Pascal Siakam is averaging, but it is more than DeMar DeRozan. He's shooting 44.8% from the field. Listen. It's just behind notoriously efficient player Zach LaVine, but it is ahead of Danilo Gallinari. He's shooting 39.8% from three. Now, that's not quite as good as Luke Kennard, but it is better than Jaren Jackson Jr. His player efficiency rating is 20.4. Now, it's not quite as good as Domantas Sabonis, but it is ahead of De'Aaron Fox. Like, that's what he's been this year. Folks will say, oh, my God, Nick, you're forgetting the playoff runs. What? The fact that he dunked over LeBron once in a series where he averaged 18-4-2? I think other people are forgetting, Antoine, the playoff series against Milwaukee when he gave you a resounding 12 points per game on 36% from the field. That's the last time we saw him in the playoffs. So if he's about to take a supersonic leap, Antoine, I'm excited to see it. But we don't have any evidence of it aside from 12 games in February. And so that's what I will need to see in order to believe the Celtics can make the finals, much less win a championship.
I think, Nick, you're obviously right because the February got everybody excited. It got me excited. We saw an offensive package that we didn't think he had. He was really, really good. So I think everybody's holding their head on that he can be the next guy, the next great Celtic, and he has the potential to be that. So I think as the season goes along, that we see, continue to see him in the playoffs, and if he's able to show up big come Eastern Conference Finals against the Milwaukee Bucks, which I believe those two teams would meet up, we'll see if he can get over that hump, and then obviously you can have LeBron James winning in the finals. So it remains to be seen, but he's headed in the right direction.
You said the word there, Antoine, potential. All right, let's get back to some football.
Oh,
Cam Newton paired up with one of his new receivers. New hat, N'Keal Harry. Both these guys with something to prove this year. Cam and the Patriots next. First things first. Back here with Brian Westbrook, and we are drawing a blank, gentlemen. A week after we saw Cam working out with Mohamed Sanu, he was back in action yesterday with N'Keal Harry, this from out in L.A. Jay Glazer weighing in on how Cam will fit in up there in New England, said a healthy Cam can certainly be the Patriots quarterback of the future. Nick, Cam's chances of being the long-term answer at QB are blank.
With respect to the great Jay Glazer, I'm going to say very slim, but not for the reasons I think a lot of people would think. I think Cam is going to ball out this year, and that's going to put the Patriots in a very tricky spot. either franchise tag him, which would be for 2021, around a $33 million cap hit, which I don't know if they're equipped to, under to take on, or sign him to a massive long-term deal, because I think there will be suitors, and that doesn't seem like Belichick's style. So I think this is going to be a one-year-only appearance for Cam, even though I expect him to do wonderfully there, Brian. So I say it's very slim because of the money.
You know, I agree with Jay Glazer, and I'm saying his chances to be the long-term fit are high. And here's the reason why. There's been a lot said that Cam can't be a fit with Belichick and things like that. But this is what I know about athletes. They're adjustable, and Cam understands what he's headed into up there in New England, just like Randy Moss and so many other players that have went to New England and have had success. But also, Bill Belichick understands what they're getting with Cam. So they're going to play to his strengths. As long as he's healthy, I think Cam has a very good season, and the Patriots will want to sign him to a long-term contract.
Look, if I didn't think he was going to be the long-term answer to the New England Patriots, I wouldn't have spent $1,100 on Fanatics buying Cam Newton jerseys yesterday. Nick, I also agree with the money. But look, we didn't think it could work this year. We were dead last in cap space, and we got Cam on an incentive-laden deal. We're going to be sixth next year, so maybe Belichick will give him a big boatload of money. Maybe we get into the QuickBooks and figure out a way, because once Cam's got the Super Bowl ring, I think it all sort of evens out, Jenna.
Oh, my Super Bowl.
I like it. Cam basically playing for free this year. Why is Ezekiel Elliott so fired up? An anonymous NFL coach said this about the Cowboys running back. Very few breakout runs. Doesn't look as strong anymore. Feels like he's about 60 to 70% of what he was. To which Zeke replied, whoever that is faded, LOL. Nick, Zeke pushing back on an anonymous coach who said he isn't a top 10 running back is blank.
This is good social media for a number of reasons. He's not punching down at some random fan. This is a coach in the league in which he plays, a coach who didn't want to put his name on it, went anonymous. It's a little self-deprecating because Zeke has a little bit of a social media history of himself involving the word faded, so that was good. And I think it's a little chip on your shoulder. So I think this is good social media by Zeke. I give this 7.5 out of 10 on the Kevin Durant social media scale. I like it.
I think this is going to be solely motivation for Zeke. NFL players are always looking for motivation, trying to get that slight so they can work a little bit harder. And I guarantee you, before every single game, Zeke will look at this clip and say, was it the Eagles coach that said that? Was it the Redskins coach that said that? Was it the Giants coach that said that? And he'll find a way to make sure that he has that motivation that he needs. This is great motivation for Zeke.
So I went with level-headed, and here's why. Just because someone says something mean about you on the internet anonymously doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. So I see my background here. I will go on to the comments, Nick. The guy's like, this guy went from having nothing in the background to a bunch of crooked pictures. And you know what I did? I said, you know what, buddy? That's not a troll job. That's just accurate, constructive criticism. I went and got a level for you, buddy. And I checked it out. So look, Zeke, this is a true story. Zeke, the guy's not wrong. You only had four runs over 20 yards. It's once on every 75 attempts, so it can be mean and accurate at the same time.
Zeke's got a chip on his shoulder. Watch out, defenses. Moving on, really NFL.com's Adam Schein published his list of the league's most complete teams. Guess who didn't come in first or second? The defending Super Bowl champs, the Kansas City Chiefs, ranked third behind Baltimore and San Francisco. So, Nick, Chiefs being ranked as the third most complete team is blank.
Well, first of all, shout out to Adam Schein, who not only has a great radio show, but a great, wonderfully produced television show as well. Also, this to me is shocking. And here's why it's shocking. Because I'm old enough to remember a time 18 months ago when the Chiefs were the least balanced team in the NFL, least complete team, literally. They had the number one offense and the 31st ranked defense. And now we're a year later, they had a top five offense, the 7th ranked scoring defense. I saw this ranking, I said, Schein, what are you thinking? Like, the Chiefs aren't complete. And then I remembered, not only did, of course, we win the Super Bowl, but our defense got far, far better. So I was, as a Chiefs fan, I was shocked to see us this high, not this low, because in my head, we're still an unbalanced team, but Schein has dissuaded me, and now I'm starting to, as I talk myself through it, I actually think we were underranked here, Brian. Probably should have been number one.
Well, I'll tell you this. The Chiefs, they should not have been number one. And I think the list is factual. When you talk about the Ravens as well as San Francisco, they are much more complete team. Now, the Chiefs have a much better player at the most important position in football, and that's Patrick Mahomes. But if you're talking about defense and offense, then you have to have the Baltimore Ravens as well as the San Francisco 49ers in front of the Chiefs.
Look, I this needed a clarification. Nick, I co-sign you that Shine's got a great radio show and a TV show. But in the article, in the draft, Brett Veach scooped up Clyde Edwards-Helaire at Dynamic, all-purpose back, whom Andy Reid described as being better than Brian Westbrook. He did, but then he called Brian, or Brian, you called him, or you guys texted or paged each other, and he clarified that. I think it was has the potential to be... Yeah, I got a page. You guys on page. So it's the potential to be as good as the great elite Brian Westbrook.
I was once a very good football player, and it took me a long time to get to that point. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is already better than me. He hasn't played one down in the NFL. Andy Reid, this kid better be good.
Wilds, I'm going to send you a telex later. Let's talk Madden ratings. Ooh, EA Sports announced the overall ratings for the incoming rookie quarterback class. And first overall pick, Joe Burrow, leads the way with 76. Tua, 73. Love at 71. Nick, the Madden rookie quarterback ratings are blank.
Brutal for the LA Chargers. Now, first of all, I would have Tua ahead of Burrow. I'm on the record on that, but that's not my takeaway here. My takeaway here is this. The guy who was taken sixth overall, Justin Herbert by the Chargers, is behind Jordan Love, a guy who the Packers don't expect to see the field for at least 2 years, if not longer. And the Chargers had a fork in the road moment for their franchise. Sitting at six, they could have drafted Isaiah Simmons, the do-it-all defensive player out of Clemson. They would add him and Derwin James as two hybrid players to go along with Bosa and Ingram. You sign Cam as your quarterback. You have Tyrod Taylor's an insurance policy. And you strike a little fear in the heart of Chiefs fans everywhere. Instead, they took a quarterback who's going to end up being the fourth or fifth best quarterback in his draft class at six overall. You don't upgrade the defense, which could have been dominant. And it's a reminder of how big of a reach the Chargers had at number six with Herbert behind Love here, Brian.
You know, when I was playing, I didn't care at all about the Madden ratings. I didn't really play Madden very much. And so
really?
I didn't realize how serious it was. But when you listen to some of these young guys that are playing now, and really the guys that I play with, I have to understand that these ratings are serious business. As soon as the Madden games comes out, they're looking up what their rating there is. And this is also motivation. We talk about the motivation for Zeke and his ability and coaches doubting him. The Madden rating has been motivation for a lot of different guys. And Kevin, when I look at it, I look back to mine. It was in the 80s. And I'm like, oh, I'm a 90s rating type of player. They need to fix things in Madden.
Easily. Brian, it's funny that you mentioned that. There's clips on YouTube. It's called, the smartest plays in NFL history. And one of the plays is when you go down to the one-yard line and fall down. I was like, oh, that was a great play. Also, one of the worst fantasy plays of all time in sports history, Brian Westbrook, everybody. I went with, what did I go with here talking about fantasy sports? Oh, I went after week one. Poor Tua's got to go into the lion's den with Cam Newton and Bill Belichick. He's got a rating of 73. He's going to get shut out in Foxborough, so that's going to tank. So I don't know if we're going to root for Ryan Fitzpatrick there to keep the rating okay.
All right, we'll see. Hey, guys, are we going to see the same LeBron James when the NBA restarts 3 weeks from today? This is First Things First.
Brian, you were a 94 overall in 2009.
That's pretty good.
I got your back, man.
That's great, Brian.
A 94 overall.
Back here with Antoine Walker. Time for stories to start your morning. Tiger Woods officially committed to the Memorial Tournament next week in Columbus.
Yeah, he did.
His first PGA Tour event since February and first competitive event since the match in May. Nick, you have Tiger winning every single tournament he enters for the rest of your life. So you like him winning the Memorial for the sixth time?
No. Jenna, let's be fair. I pick Tiger to win every major every year, not every tournament. But you know what tournament I do always pick him to win? The Memorial, which he's won five times, about to be six. And he's going to break Sam Snead's record for all-time wins on tour, get his sixth Memorial victory, get his 83rd tour victory. We were talking earlier about Celtics championship odds. The Celtics odds to win the championship, plus 1,800. Tiger Woods, Wild's odds to win the Memorial, right around plus 1,800. Save the money you're going to waste on the Celtics. Bet on Tiger to win the Memorial. I can't call it free money. It's too tough because it's a golf tournament. A lot of things can happen. But I love him at 18-1, Wild's.
Nick, you are on a hot streak. Is this an official pick? Because you've got the Harvick pick, you had the Secretariat pick, they got out of nowhere.
No, he always goes with Tiger,
right now. Is
America.
This official?
Careful.
Hold on. It is not an official gambling advice moment until we see how this week's tournament goes. We got to let this week's tournament, I think it's the Workman Charity, Workday Charity Open, let that finish up, and around this time next week, we'll let you know, Antoine. But I'm telling you right now, Tiger, win number 83. I feel it coming in about 11 days.
I'm the biggest Tiger fan, so I'm with you. Usually when Tiger's playing well, I'm playing well. So I like the fact he's back.
Yeah.
I like
you
it.
Didn't know I had a golf game. You didn't know I had a golf game, did you, there, Nick?
Let's hit the links when the world opens up, Antoine.
Let's go.
All right, moving on. Next up, I got Tibbs. According to Woj, Tom Thibodeau, the top candidate for the Knicks head coaching job. Antoine, Tibbs a good fit in New York. They're bringing a lot of guys in they're looking at.
I like Tibbs. I think he's a great coach. I got an opportunity to really watch him coach when he was obviously with the Bulls. I don't think he'll be a good pick for them. I don't think he's good with young guys. I think they have to find the right fit, a guy that can motivate young guys. This is a team that's not got a big-time free agent. You don't know when they're going to get a big-time free agent, so you got to develop talent from within. Tibbs is stubborn. He wants to win right now. And with this team, this Knicks team, you got to develop. I mean, you got R.J. Barrett, Kevin Knox. You got these guys, Julius Randle. So you got to continue trying to develop these young guys. I don't think Tibbs is the right coach for him. I think he's more for a veteran team, a team that's already playoff ready. I just don't like that fit for them. I would like to see somebody else there.
Wilds, Antoine just pulled a me. I really like this guy. I think he's a great guy, which is why he's going to stink. Like, I just heard someone else do my thing, which is you compliment on the front end so you can knife him in the back of the back end.
That's right.
Antoine's major knock on it.
It's because he wants to win. Wrong guy wants to win. Wrong guy for New York. You know the organization's in a bad spot when a coach who wants to win is the wrong choice. Antoine, who do you want in there if you don't love Tibbs?
But you got to think about it. He has to develop talent. Tibbs is going to have to develop those young guys. So it may take a year or two for these guys to start hitting their potential. I don't know if he has the patience for it. I think he needs to win right away. I'm kind of biased. I like Mark Jackson. I just like what he did with Steph and Clay and Draymond and those guys as far as motivating them, making them better players. I know they don't have the same talent as the Knicks. Don't think I'm crazy. I know the Knicks don't have that type of talent right now on the roster. But, you know, R.J. Barrett looks like he's going to be a pretty good player. Julius Randle is showing he could be really good. They got some pieces there. You got to continue to develop those guys.
Jenna, it'd be amazing for Mark Jackson. He'd go from one of the best shooting teams ever to the worst shooting team in the league. Go ahead, Jenna. Sorry.
A little net result here. Hey, was KD the reason the team signed his good friend Michael Beasley this week?
Yes.
Brooklyn Nets GM Sean Marks came out and backed KD yesterday saying, I don't think it's fair to call Kevin on every single thing we do. I added the tone and the nuance. Wilds, you buying Kevin Durant had nothing to do with this?
I have no idea what to make of this story. If you don't call Kevin Durant, what are you doing? Like Jenna, if we hired Marnie to be the graphics producer, it'd be weird if you talked to Marnie and be like, Marnie, you're working on graphics? I didn't know that.
That's my best friend.
So
someone has to tell me these things.
So just embrace it. Just be like, Kevin Durant is the cornerstone of this franchise. Of course I talk to him. We're always looking about fit and chemistry for the team. Of course I consulted him. We're a players first organization. And we think Michael Beasley is going to have 8 games to prove himself, minus the suspension, which screws everything up. What has he got, 2 games to prove himself now, Nick? And we're looking for him. He's going to be a great part of the Brooklyn Nets, we hope.
All right, I know this is obnoxious, what I'm about to do. And I know I'm the math guy. You're not the math guy. But 8 minus 5 wild shouldn't be a hard equation.
I don't
equation
know how many games
you.
He got suspended. Three. I thought it was.
You said 5. You said 5. Well, and then you were like, 8 games minus 5. I think that's 2.
I thought it was regardless. An extra game.
Sean Marks. Listen, Sean. The fact that you signed a player who played very sparingly and poorly in his last time in the league and is facing a suspension, and now you're telling the world, no, this was all me. I like you, Sean Marks. What you doing? This signing makes no sense whatsoever unless it's because KD was like, hey, we got these roster spots. Why don't you give Super Cool Bees a try? Which I'm totally fine with. Like, Super Kevin Durant cool is trying to, you know, follow a very, call it scripted out path that someone else has already laid out for him on how to lead a team and be an NBA superstar. And so first step is he tried to get the right coach in there. Kenny Atkinson, you're gone. And now it's bringing guys he's comfortable with. But when you have an 8-game regular season left, Antoine, and Bees is suspended for the first 5, it just strikes me as an odd signing.
Listen, man, I was an all-star in the league, and every decision when I was with the Celtics came through me and Paul, no matter who we signed.
Nice.
They asked us first and got our opinion. I don't know why Sean Marks is trying to do this and say Kevin didn't have anything to do with it. He'll be crazy, too. Who knows Michael Beasley better than Kevin Durant? So obviously you want to get his opinion about it and see if it's okay to bring him in. So I don't know why he did that. Maybe he's trying to take the pressure off himself to say that, look, I'm out here trying to find talent to replace the 5 guys that we're going to be missing. But no, he definitely talked to Kevin about it. It's typical. Any good GM is going to talk to their best players about bringing in guys. It's the only
Thank
right
you.
Thing to do, because those are the guys that you live behind. You got to make sure that those guys are happy. So believe me, and not only KD got a call, Kyrie Irving got a call too. Believe that.
All okay, right.
Believe
well,
it.
If you guys
that.
Bring Marnie in for graphics, please make sure you call me immediately. On to the Return of the King. The New York Times published a column yesterday, talked about how much the NBA landscape has changed over the past couple of months. But one thing that absolutely hasn't changed is LeBron's mentality and his tireless drive to win. The article read in part, at the time, James had the Lakers primed for a title run. At 49-14, they had the best record in the Western Conference, and James was playing some of the most complete basketball of his career. But he had significant groin injury last season, and no athlete, not even James, can be dominant forever. Despite the season's idiosyncrasies, he seems determined to seize the opportunity before him. What would it mean for LeBron's future if he doesn't pick up where he left off, Nick?
Well, if he doesn't pick up where he left off, it means the Lakers don't win the title. And if the Lakers don't win the title this year, a very particular specific window closes on LeBron, his ability to get to 6 rings. Now, I think it is obvious he does not need to get to 6 rings to be the greatest player ever. But for some folks who obviously consider, you know, Bill Russell the greatest ever and then Jordan and Kareem are tied because it's just count the rings, count the rings, count the rings. 6 rings would be very helpful for LeBron because he already has Jordan topped in every statistical category that matters and everything else, but Jordan has those rings. If the Lakers win the title this year, Wilds, they will go into next year as the favorites. They pull off a back-to-back, he's at 5. And then he can maybe follow the Kareem path of peeling a ring in his later years when he is no longer a dominant player. You might say later years. How many more years do you think he's going to play? I think LeBron's going to play 5 more seasons after this one. That's the minimum number of seasons he'd have to play to have any shot of playing with his son, if his son can make the league. And if right now in year 17 he's still the best player in the world, then in year 20 he'll still be a top 12 player at the very least. So I think he's got 5 more years to go along with this one. That's 6 playoff runs. If he wants any chance at 3 more rings, Wilds, in order to match Jordan, they have to cash it in this year, which is why, Kevin, it's good they're the overwhelming favorites.
But do you think he needs 6 rings, Nick? Like, America, you are seeing some Nick Wright vulnerability. If you cut Nick Wright, he bleeds too. If you cut his hair, it doesn't work. But if you cut him, he bleeds. Like, you should not move on this. You do not talk about 6 rings on this show, Nick. It's not just the 6 rings. It's the losses. He said, so unless we're giving him a DeLorean, there might be a Back to the Future ride in Universal nearby in Orlando that he can get on and erase the losses. That's what he would. That's what he would need to do, Nick. It's not just the wins.
Okay, so couple things. One is, I have not moved on this at all, but I enjoy more people joining up with me. When I went on Colin Cowherd's show 2 days after the Cavs beat the Warriors and said, LeBron isn't on pace to be the greatest player ever, he is the greatest player ever, I think that was about 2% national approval rating. We saw after the Jordan doc, it's now at about 23%. The needle has moved. Eventually, it's going to be overwhelming above 50%, I believe. If he gets to 6 rings, it's not even going to be a discussion. It's going to be like Gretzky and the rest of hockey. The debate is about who the second greatest player ever is, not who the greatest player ever is. The losses, there's one loss, Antoine, that's a blemish on his resume. 2011. That is it. That is the only actual blemish on his resume. Every other year, he was the best player in those finals. 2007, he wasn't the best player. He's 22 years old. So the losses don't concern me at all, but I don't think he can get to 6, which some people say he has to get to, Antoine, if they don't cash it in this season.
He don't have to get to 6. And one thing you got to think about for LeBron, every year is a challenge. So one thing you got to think about, how can he motivate himself every year? Obviously, this year he's very focused. He's trying to bring that fourth championship. But after that, you know, he has to continually get his body together. You know, it's really hard work to get to play at that level, to be at MVP level. So we got to see how much more that he has in the tank to mentally to be ready to go to continue to fight. But I don't think LeBron is chasing 6 rings. I think LeBron is chasing 1 ring in L.A. to do it with 3 different teams. I think that's where he sets the difference at. Nick, I do believe he's the best player in the league right now. Arguably, he can finish up probably the second best player to ever play the game. I still think Michael Jordan's the best player to ever play the game. But for LeBron, right now, I think it's all about getting one for the Lakers. I think that just to be a part of the Kareems, the Magics, the Kobe Bryants, I think he wants to be on that list that's brought championships to Los Angeles and do it with 3 different organizations. And then I think after that, it's going to, you know, you got to find that motivation year in and year out. I mean, Father Time catches up with everybody. We know he's been unbelievable in taking care of his body and making sure he's healthy. But it's hard every year to find that motivation when you've done everything in your career and you accomplished everything. It's not about money. Obviously, he's going to get all the individual accolades. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to do all those things. So every year he has to find motivation to keep going to be able to be the elite. Every team he's played on, he's been the best player. He has to be the best player. I don't know if he could take a backseat role. What if he doesn't want to take that backseat role? Maybe he don't want to play in the later years where he's not the best player on the floor. So we got to think about those things for LeBron. But I think the window is this year and next year for LeBron to win this title.
Well, as far as taking a backseat role, Antoine, I think you saw this year with his transition to point guard that I think in his once he does start truly deteriorating athletically, which amazingly he hasn't really 17 years in, I think he'll transition seamlessly to like a super rich man's Jason Kidd, which is an unbelievable, you know, way to be able to play at year 20. And I think that's what he'll do. But Wilds, Antoine raised, I thought, a very interesting point, which is the next step being the third ring with the third different team. If he were to finish his career without winning another one, I do think, while I'll still believe he's the greatest player ever, he's already accomplished it, that 23% that I said agree with me, Wilds, I think that number starts going in the other direction. If he plays 4 more years with the Lakers, they never win a title. I think it starts going, you know, closer to 15%, 10%, than moving upwards, even when he passes Kareem on the all-time scoring list, Wilds.
I'll give you a weird one that you hate, Nick. What if he made the finals and lost? So would making the finals and losing actually be worse for his legacy than losing in the Western Conference Finals?
Well, of course it would, because you have a lot of dopes in the media that think losing later is worse than losing early.
I know.
You've got a lot of folks that think, evidently, the worst thing you can do is, as an Olympian, is win a silver medal. You're far better not meddling at all. Like, it's just lunacy. So, yeah, I think the narrative, it would hurt him. We only have, like, 20 seconds left in the show. I promised America, Jenna, a major announcement.
Oh, here we go.
Wilds, you didn't know it, but you spoiled it. The major announcement is, guess what's happening tomorrow? I'm getting a haircut. So Monday, America, it's going to be a totally new Nick Wright. First haircut in 5 months, Jenna Wolf. So Monday, I'm excited to see how I look.
We're all excited, Nick. We're all excited. All the best to you, Nick.
Whichever
side you're sitting on. Have a great weekend, everybody. Twan, thanks.